This is Dylan.
This is Nick. And you're listening to
Colloquium, Colloquium.
Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me over.
Yeah, no problem. It's kind of fun, huh?
Yeah, we're on the road today here. It's a road podcast. Well, it's a road podcast for me.
That's right. Yeah, we decided to have it at Nick's home place here. Right as I'm in the middle of moving out too, so but we're making it work.
We don't have the usual like art museum in the dining room here.
That's right. The first thing I did was take down all the art. So I think it's all off the wall now, which is sad, but hopefully it'll go back up.
So this will be a little different being at Nick's apartment here, or what was once Nick's apartment.
Indeed.
Will no longer be after not long from now. But if you've seen our pictures on like Instagram or anything, a lot of the pictures we took when we first started out, this is one of the places we would record. So some of those pictures are actually from that. If you envision that, then you can picture where we're at right now. Mm-hmm. Normally we record from just kind of in my office at home, and the walls are very bare. Yeah. But I don't think anybody's seen that. But whatever your picture from those videos or from those pictures online, that's what you're seeing. That's what you're listening to right now.
Yeah. Fun stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So today, this is a special episode, I think.
It is a special episode, yeah.
Because today, we're going to talk all about Nick Smith.
All
the
right.
Man, the myth, the legend. But no, in all seriousness, we are going to talk about Nick. We're going to talk about you, and you're going to share a little bit of your testimony.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm reminded of that Toby Keith song. You know that song where he goes,
Want to talk about me?
I want to talk about me.
Yeah. Did you wake up singing that song this morning?
That's what I've been thinking literally for this entire, our entire podcast careers here. So finally, we get to talk about me instead of...
Fair enough. But yeah, so testimonies are something that I think we talked a lot about as missionaries. They were definitely a big part of our missionary outreach, I guess. So I guess I want to start out, before jumping into your story, talk about what's the purpose of a testimony at all to begin with?
Sure, yeah. Well, I think the main point that I think is missed a lot of times about testimonies is it's not really about you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it can turn into that sometimes. Yeah. But anyway, when we say we're going to talk about me with my testimony, it is sort of about me, but it's really it's about Jesus through me. It's about telling those who are listening to your testimony about how Jesus has worked in your life. That's the point of a testimony. Yeah. So it's about Jesus.
It's not about the Toby Keith song.
It's not. Yeah. It's definitely not. Still a cool, fun song.
Yeah. So I remember there were four parts, I think. Let's see if I can remember this. Four parts of a testimony that we talked about in Focus. It was like your life before Jesus, like the encounter with Jesus, your life after Jesus. Maybe it's just three parts.
Maybe it is. I honestly can't remember.
I think those are the three main parts, right?
Yeah.
But obviously, like, I think we often think of a testimony, and you think of, and this is something we talked a lot about in Focus, but you think of, oh, okay, I was a grave sinner, and then I encountered Jesus, and I am no longer a grave sinner, right? Like, that's not the point of it. It's not the point of the story. Yes, you do want to highlight moments of conversion, moments of being drawn deeper in, moments of turning, like the metanoia, the turning, change of heart.
Hmm.
But at the same time, it's not a dramatic 180 or 360 for 180, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not a dramatic 180 for everyone, right? But I think we should all, in thinking about what is my testimony, reflect back and think on, okay, what is the moment of grace or the moments of grace in my life? What are they? How did my life look before, and how does it look after? And it doesn't have to be this dramatic story necessarily, but I think some of the coolest testimonies to me don't always involve that dramatic 180, I think.
Yeah, that's right. I think in a lot of ways, some of the simpler testimonies, you know, can relate to more people. If someone gets up there and says, hey, like I was a Satanist and now I'm a committed Catholic, or whatever, like that's beautiful, but it's, you know, not exactly relatable for the average person. So,
yeah, no, that's exactly right.
Right, yeah. So I think some of the simpler testimonies are more relatable. I'll also say, too, that I know that it doesn't seem to happen, at least not to me, it doesn't seem to happen very often that I sit down and tell someone my, like, entire story, you know?
Yeah,
I think a lot of times what happens, too, is I have little snippets of my story, my moments of grace, you know, that I've seen throughout my life so far. that I am ready to bring out, like, you know, and share with people when the reason comes about. You know, I don't share my full story most times. I share parts of my story that are relevant, you know, so this will be a little bit of an abnormality today, I think.
Right. Yeah. And I think that was something we talked about as well, is when you're sharing your testimony, you should be familiar enough with your story and prepared to share whatever part of it is most relevant.
That's right.
Right. And I think that's how it comes out in day-to-day life, right?
Right. Yeah.
Is you share one aspect of your story, because normally it's, from an evangelical standpoint, right, it's not really practical to say, well, let's sit down, let me tell you my life story.
Right.
But it can be practical. Something comes up in conversation and say, hey, this thing happened to me once, and this changed my life. Right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess another thing, I like that we're doing this. I like that we're sitting down and having this conversation, and maybe one day we'll do one about me.
Right. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. but it reminds me of, I remember one of the things I did, I think both of my years in focus with my teammates. I don't know if you ever did this, but one of our first kind of nights on campus, we'd gather around, we'd have a meal, we'd share a drink, and we'd all just share testimonies. And these were like life story testimonies.
Right.
We'd start from, you know, the womb, and, well, not quite, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
You know, we'd tell the whole like life journey up until that point. And that was really such a beautiful thing, just to hear those stories of the people I was working so closely with.
Yeah. Yeah. We did that too, with at least one of my teams. And, it's worth it when you're able to, and, when you have the time, and you know, the people are wanting to hear whatever, but
right.
But it is few and far between usually. But yeah, those are good experiences. I'm with you.
Yeah. But since we have the time, let's get into it.
Let's do it. We got the time. Might as well.
All right, Nick. So let's start on June 7th.
June 9th.
9th. 1993.
Three.
Okay.
Yeah, Dylan.
All right. That's when your good story going. Begins.
Yep. So I remember coming out of the womb. It was.
Well, it's not good. Please.
No, I don't remember that. Anyway. I guess I'll start from there though. I was born into a. Is that better?
Yeah. Dylan, yeah, I was just.
Dylan has asked me to speak into the mic more. Yeah. So I can. Okay. All right. Good. So. All right. I'm ready.
We're
now.
Just angled a little bit, and so it's okay. Like when you. Yeah. You got
okay.
It.
You gotcha. Got you. Yeah, so I was born into a family. I'm the oldest of three, mm-hmm. So I was the firstborn son, the heir to the throne, as they say.
That's right.
Yeah, so my family, we grew up Catholic. My mom is family is very Catholic, so mm-hmm. we grew up going to Mass on most Sundays. We have a very very close family life. Mm-hmm. Too, which is an important thing to talk about.
And I think you still do.
Yeah, we still do.
You're all still pretty close.
Yeah, we are still close. Yeah, thank God. We moved around a lot growing up because both of my parents actually were in the Army, so we moved around a ton, and I think we were just our own natural community. So, so that was a real blessing that has kind of maintained itself to the present day, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I know there's a lot of people, too, that just don't have that. So, yeah, I can't speak for that enough. But yeah, we went to Mass on Sundays. I would say our family spiritual life was I would say relatively healthy. I would say that we didn't, you know, pray the rosary every night together, or you know, we didn't, you know, pray to the saints every night. We just didn't have like a that was something that we talked about every night kind of a spiritual life with each other, you know. Yeah, that was, I think, just because of that, I think our Catholic faith was important. But it was never really, for me, it was never really like the thing that was the center of my life, I think, growing up. And it was important, but it just was never the center of my life, I don't think, you know, until a certain point.
Yeah, so it's interesting because I did know you a little bit growing up and not super well. And I remember, you know, the things I knew about you and the conversations that I had with you, and, you know, my brother played, you know, sports with you. And I think that, you know, you had a good reputation, right? And I think you were involved in, I remember you being involved in youth group, and like, mm-hmm. I remember seeing you, I didn't know a ton about you, but I remember seeing you as somebody who was fairly involved in the church. Would you say that was true in high school?
I'd say that was true. Oh, in high school. Yeah. I would say that was true. Yes. Okay. We can talk a little bit more about that. I think growing up though, even younger before high school, and this is really just the grace of God. I can't tell you really why, per se, but I just always kind of had a sense that God was present in my life. And that was always, he was always a part of my life. There was never really a period where I seriously doubted God intellectually or emotionally or anything, you know, outside of a couple moments here and there. So God was always, you know, an important role and a person in my life, which just by the grace of God, I'm not really sure why.
It's a sheer grace.
Yeah. So I was involved in youth group growing up. And again, it was just one of those things, though. It wasn't really the central part of my mass and youth group, and it wasn't the central part of my life, you know. Go ahead.
You know what I just remembered? This is I think, where this idea of you being, like, involved in the church comes from. You were an extraordinary minister of Holy Communion.
I was in my late high school years. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Because my family, we'd go to Mass at your church at Good Shepherd from time to time. Actually, when I was in high school, my parents and I started going there more often than
I don't remember that. Okay.
And, you distribute communion.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that. I forgot that I did that late in high school. Yeah. So I think it was my senior year I did that. Yeah. So
when you're doing that, are you like, you know, are you doing this because it's something you felt called to, or like you got volunteered for? How did that come about?
Gosh, that's a great question, isn't it? I honestly forgotten that I'd done that. I think it was, just someone had reached out to our parish, maybe even to the older members of our youth group. And I thought, hey, I'll sign up for that. No problem. I mean, it wasn't really a well thought out, you know, prayerful decision. I didn't get on my knees and pray, you know, before my bed about whether or not I was going to be a Eucharistic minister. But I just thought I would do it, you know. I actually remember, now that you say that, being particularly joyful doing that. I really loved it. Yeah. So
that's beautiful.
It's interesting. Yeah. I think going into high school, a couple of things happened in high school. One of which was I went to these Catholic Heart work camps with my youth group over the summers. So I went to four of them, I think all four summers of my high school career. They were week-long mission trips in the U.S. where we went to a different city with our youth group and other youth groups around the area. I mean, we just stayed there for a week and, you know, worked out in the community. We did some form of service. We painted houses. We, you know, worked with the homeless, et cetera, in the community. In the evenings, there were Catholic Heart work camp workers, essentially staff members that were college age, a little bit out of college, that would kind of lead us in, you know, activities or praise and worship or, you know, things like that. We had adoration also, mass every day. So that was an extremely, extremely formative experience for me. Just a really powerful kind of turning point to where I kind of, looking back, it was very much this way. You know, I internalized that, hey, this is something that needs to be more than what it is now.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and just also, I would say a huge factor in my story is community too. And that was where I think I first experienced real, real community, or I got a taste of it, you know, and what that meant.
Okay.
I have a really fond memory of those Catholic Heart work camps. It's a really huge turning point in my story. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't, I guess from what I know about your story, you wouldn't consider that kind of the start of your, well, in some ways it's the start of your faith journey, but that wasn't like your big conversion. That happened later?
No. Yeah. So that definitely sparked, like I said, that definitely sparked the, hey, this needs to be more important than what I'm making it right now. You know, Jesus needs to be more central in my life. I would say that propelled me into going to Catholic school in college.
Spring Hill?
Yeah, that's right. That was my way of, I went to Spring Hill College in Mobile. That was my way of, I think, saying to myself that I was making Catholicism important in my life.
Okay.
Yeah. Was, you know, go into a Catholic school.
You went there to play soccer. Did you have other options for soccer?
I did. Or? Yeah, okay. I did have a couple other options for soccer. So
being a Catholic school,
that tilted
your decision in that favor.
That was something that I always said was important as what was different from Spring Hill than the others. I would, you know, people would ask me why I was going to Spring Hill, and I would say, oh, I play soccer. I get to play soccer, and it's a Catholic school. That was one of the two things I would list. You know, so. That was a huge factor, I think. Catholic work camps very much led into my making Catholicism important. So, So the Catholic work camps were huge in my conversion and my making Catholicism more the center of my life. So there was another period too, I think, and all stories are filled with moments of turning towards the light and then moving away from. And I definitely had a moving away from period in my high school life. My early high school, well, it's kind of mid high school, my sophomore, beginning of my junior year. I just got really, really stressed out. Honestly, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this. Got really stressed out with, you know, school and, you know, the commitments with sport, soccer especially. I just felt a lot of pressure to succeed, you know, to make the A or to get the work done or to perform on the soccer field. You know, it was a very kind of a people-pleasing kind of thing. You know, I just
sure.
felt like I needed to live up to those standards that were being asked of me or that I was asking of myself, really. And I fell into a lot of things. I fell into just some mental health issues was one of the things. And it's a very, very dark time. Very dark time in my life. I remember it pretty clearly as being just a time where I just was suffering a lot. In isolation too. It tends to be very isolating, you know, that kind of thing. And eventually my parents brought me into counseling. They noticed that I was having some mental health issues as a result of this. I moved into some easier classes and to kind of lighten the workload and the counseling was incredible. He was just a man of God, a Christian. And he would bring that a little bit into our counseling sessions. And I just remember, like, slowly over the course of that next year, my junior year, just healing. You know, just like the clear healing process of over time. And I had some incredible friends that were really caring. That kind of helped me propel out of that you know, dark time. So again, community. And Jesus kind of entering in my life and into my life through the counseling, through my parents, you know, and kind of bringing me back to the light, so to speak. So that was a big turning point, I think, in my life.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. I don't think we'd ever, I think I'm going to continue to learn things about you through this, but I don't think we had talked a lot about that period of your life and those difficulties. And I think that's really beautiful. I think I've benefited from counseling at different points in my life, and I think it's something that does get overlooked. And I think especially in high school, you know, there's the older I get, the more I realize just how hard getting through your teenage years is.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people could benefit from experiencing that kind of healing or from opening themselves up to that kind of healing. So I think that's a really, really fruitful thing I'm glad you're able to experience that. And
Yeah. I think too about how, like a lot of people, I was seen as very much having it together in high school. You know, that was
seen as someone that I saw you as that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, pretty much everyone, I think, saw me as, you know, a performing, high achieving, you know, nice guy, whatever, that had it together. Mm-hmm. And
funny, that's smart, right,
athletic, handsome. Yeah. Gosh. I mean, just anyway, we're talking about me, right?
Okay. That's right.
No. Where was I?
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, it's okay. But, I think just knowing that about how I was perceived and just how many people were struggling the way that I was struggling, it seems to be incomprehensible, you know, just thinking about how many people were struggling like that. I bet there were a ton. I bet there were a ton, you know.
Right.
I bet there are a ton, not just were. So, yeah, I think we have this misperception as Christians a lot, or just as human beings, that we're the only ones. You know,
that's
what Satan wants to do. He wants to bring us into isolation. He wants to say, like, you're the only one that's dealing with this, and
that's right.
Yeah, you're on an island.
You
know, that's just false. It's a lie.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Okay, so you graduate high school. You go off to Spring Hill. What happens there?
I go to college. I get my degree.
Cool.
I'm just kidding. So college was a very, very, very formative time for me. I mean, I don't know that there's anyone that can't say that one way or another that's been to college, you know, for better or worse. I remember going to school, Spring Hill, and just, it's the same old story, honestly, as high school. I played soccer in college, you know, so just playing soccer and going to school and, you know, hit this and that and this obligation and that obligation. And it's just a lot of pressure, you know, a lot of isolation because of those things. You know, I didn't have a ton of friends. And that was actually a huge point where I actually just started to develop a little bit of a prayer life. It really wasn't until college that I developed a serious prayer life. And, you know, in my loneliness and in my, you know, stress, I went to the chapel. We had a beautiful chapel in the middle of campus. And it was on the way from my dorm to the library.
Yeah.
You know, I would stop and eat, you know, dinner next to the cafeteria next to the chapel. And then walk towards the library, but I would choose to stop in the chapel for 20 minutes or whatever. Wow. And, cause that was the one place where I could kind of, you know, express my,
right. And know, it's there. It's like yeah. I've been on a few, you know, I didn't go to a Catholic university, but I've been on enough, you know, campuses like that where there's something about it. Like it just calls your name. Like when you walk by a chapel every day, it's like, oh, well, I might as well. Like it can't hurt it's like, to stop in, you know, like I've got 5 minutes. Like
that's right.
Yeah. So I feel like that just being in that environment, it's just such an opportunity for grace and just to for you to open yourself up more to that grace, I think.
Right. Yeah. I think, I know adoration is a huge part of my spiritual life and my story. Mm-hmm. And I think really just spending time in front of the Blessed Sacrament, you know, in front of the tabernacle mm-hmm. during my college years. And we didn't actually have adoration very much at all, but the chapel was always open 3 a.m., 3 p.m.
Oh, wow.
It was always
that's
open.
Beautiful. Yeah.
So it didn't matter what time of day it was. So just that time spent in front of Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament, I think really just really formed me in a way mm-hmm. that I can't begin to comprehend until the next life, you know?
Right, yeah.
But yeah, so that was a huge part of my Spring Hill experience. Yeah, I did have a time in college, honestly, where I fell into the college life. I did, mm-hmm. yeah. I just had an unhealthy relationship towards, you know, in my junior year. I had a... you know, the typical college lifestyle.
Yeah.
It wasn't for very long, actually, thank God. It was for just a period of a semester, 6 months, where I just, mm-hmm. I went that route, you know. And I just remember, again, that time. Because, again, I've formed up a habit of going to the mm-hmm. chapel and praying with Jesus and, you know, et cetera. But I don't remember having a good conversation with the Lord, not one, wow. during that time, you know. And it was just a very, very just... time of suffering for me, even though yeah. I thought I was having fun in the moment, you know?
Yeah. Did you feel like that was kind of like an escape or like a way of dealing with the stress or just kind of like I want to have fun, I'm in college type thing?
Yeah, it was that. You know, I think...
The latter,
yeah. Okay. I think it was always... there was always like this thing in the back of my mind when I was going through college that I'm not having fun and everyone else is mm-hmm. because of the way that I'm living. Like mm-hmm. I'm not experiencing what I need to experience in college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think my actions that semester were as a result of that. Like, you know what? I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
I need to just quit being a bore in my apartment, which in some sense was true. But
yeah,
the way in which I went about it was very unhealthy. So mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah. So okay. I think that was the reason. But long story short, that was a very unhealthy semester. I just remember being very unhappy and suffering a lot, you know. And... this is probably the biggest turning point of my spiritual life, I think, was that next summer when I just, seriously, I still have no idea why I went to the summer camp. I mean, there was a Catholic summer camp in, you know, Kentucky, Bowling Green, Kentucky. It's called mm-hmm. Gasper River. Just the opportunity opened up.
Is this what, like after your sophomore year?
After my junior year, yeah. So 3 years into college. And I had a contact through the chaplain of the camp, and I interviewed over the phone, and they were like, yeah, we'll hire you. And the only reason I went was because I didn't really have a job in Huntsville. Mm. I didn't have an opportunity. Mm-hmm. That yeah. was really the only reason I went. I didn't know a single person. Actually, I was the first person they hired outside of Kentucky.
Oh, wow.
They've never met me before. I drove up to the camp, and I just had the, like, you know, the transformative summer of my life, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I've never heard about this.
Yeah.
That's crazy. What was the camp called?
Gasper River Catholic Gasper Youth River. Camp. So yeah, okay. What I did, it was me and about 20 or so college age staff members. We, you know, spent the summer there, 3 months, 2 months, whatever. And a different group of campers, youth campers, would come in every week, and we would serve them. And, you know, it was an outdoor kind of Catholic camp, so we would do ropes courses in the day, such and such, and mm-hmm. then we would, you know, have mass and adoration.
Yeah, but the community was a big thing there.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, community is so central to my maybe to everyone's, I don't know, but especially to my story. Yeah, mm-hmm. but community was amazing. Yeah, just a really healthy friendships. I think maybe the healthiest friendships I've ever had up to that point. You know?
Wow.
And I'll tell you this. A huge part of that summer was I had two just incredible spiritual fathers. Yeah, my the chaplain there, Father Mike, and the director of the camp, Ben, were just adult, like, incredible father figures who just were living out the Catholic faith so well in so many ways, and were just willing to be real and to, to just pour into us and be father figures for our community. And it was transformative, you know, just how often that we, you know, as a society, we've kind of gone without that, you know, we've lost our spiritual fathers that we need, you know, in so many ways. So that was such a beautiful thing for me, you know, to see.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing and ironic to me that it seems like sometimes you have to get away to experience that kind of community and support. Like, you'd think community is something we should be living, you know, every day, right? That should be found best in the community we actually live in.
Right.
But it seems, and I think my experience is similar at times, where like it's like I have to actually leave the community I'm in order to experience good community.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you. It seems like you do have to step away, I think, to experience reality as it really is a lot of times, you know.
Because you get complacent.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have this perception, too, that when you go to these quote-unquote retreat experiences or these camp experiences that I think I heard Father Mike Schmidt say this once, but we have this perception that that's not reality. And when we leave the retreat camp experiences, we're going back to reality or whatever now. Mm-hmm. And it's actually the opposite. You know, the going to the camp or going to the retreat when you have those experiences, that's what real life is.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, and your goal is to kind of bring that into your quote-unquote real life, you know. So anyway, long story short, very transformative. I had a beautiful senior year. I won't go into detail, but by happenstance I got involved with Focus that next year. There was a Focus community the campus next to mine, University of South Alabama,
right?
Yeah. And you guys, I remember the Focus missionary there. I have this really memorable experience or queer memory of him, like, just spending time with me and caring about me. He decided to come to, like, my intramural basketball game one night at 10 p.m. I still remember that. Just, like, random pickup basketball game at 10 p.m. He's like, yeah, cool, I'll come watch you play or whatever. And that was so meaningful. I just remember how meaningful that was. Yeah. I was like, why would he do that? You know, and I just decided kind of, you know, over time, or especially with that experience, that if I was going to, you know, share the good news with the people that I was called to share it with, that's the way that I was going to do it. You know, just like intentional investment like that. So that propelled me to Focus.
That's cool. I see that. Because I see that in the way you live out your faith now and the way you evangelize. Like, I just see the, you know, in your coaching especially, how you'll, you know, you'll go the extra mile to go watch them when they're playing on other teams and support them in those. So I can see the influence that even had and continues to have on you.
That's a good point. That particular experience, like, made all the difference for me and how I view my, you know, my spiritual life evangelically, you know. So I'm with you on that. Yeah, that's a good point. But Focus was Focus.
Okay so you encountered Focus missionaries. You felt called to it.
And I jumped into Focus. Focus was definitely the most formative period of my life as a Catholic Christian. I have the prayer life that I do today. I have the, you know, the intellectual life that I do today. I have, like, the life of virtue that I do today, and we know that's not perfect. But anyway, I have the you know, the pursuit of virtue that I do today because of Focus, because of the that, I guess, organization's desire to pour themselves into me, you know, and make me into a disciple. So, yeah, so many incredible memories from Focus, so many friendships that I'll have forever because of Focus. My spirituality is the way that it is because of my Focus experience. The way that I think is, you know, because of my... So Focus very much shaped me into the man that I am becoming. You know, it set me on that path. So... I'm sure you could say the same, but...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, beautiful time. I spent 2 years at Ave Maria in South Florida, Catholic school. And I won't go into a ton of detail because I could go on and on.
Okay.
But that was my Focus experience, I think.
Yeah, let's... actually, I want to backtrack a little bit, if that's all right.
Okay.
And I want to come back to Focus, too.
Yeah.
But so when you did this camp right before your senior year of college...
Yep.
You also, it was that previous year that you kind of, you lived your college lifestyle. What would you say was that? Was it that camp that led you out of it, or do you remember what that? What was that like? Transitioning back out of that lifestyle and trying to live virtue again.
That's a really good point. A really good question. I mean, it's a hard one to answer actually, because I think it really was. This camp was very much just like a by the grace of God experience. You know, when I came back to campus, there really wasn't that, you know, desire really, from what I can remember, to go back to that life. There was a desire to do what I knew was the right thing to do. And I can remember in my junior year, you know, I can remember justifying the things that I was doing in my mind. You know, like, yeah, the Lord wants you to have fun. The Lord wants you to do this, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you're all right. That's not wrong or whatever. But I think
rationalization.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But the camp exposed that for what it was, and that was a lie, you know. And I always knew what the right thing to do was.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a matter of, you know, coming to the light and, you know, facing the truth. And I think once I did that over the course of the camp, it was, I won't say easy, but it was, you know, pretty straightforward. That kind of a thing. So, my senior year was, I made mistakes. Sure. I made mistakes, but, my senior year was, it was a huge 180.
You made some changes.
It was a 180. Yeah. I made changes. Exactly right. Yeah.
So you went into, to your time and focus. You say, I mean, obviously you probably didn't have the prayer life that you had, you know, in focus and have had since, but what was, I guess, where were you at? You're pretty solid going in. Cause I know there's some missionaries who are like really rough around the edges coming in. And then there's some who are saints already, but
I definitely wasn't a saint, but but I would say that I was not at the beginning stages in my faith life. I had very, you know, through the stories that I've shared now, like I'd very much had my conversion encounters, you know, where I wasn't going back at that point.
Yeah.
You know, I'd already had my, this is how I'm going to live my life experience.
And you were building good habits already.
Right.
And
I was, so.
And then focus itself, you obviously encounter community in a deeper way. You, I think, were probably challenged in all sorts of ways, just in personal spiritual discipline, also in terms of outreach. Like, how did that experience change you as a missionary?
Yeah, and focus, you mean? Is that what you're saying? Yeah. So, I think with focus, especially the things that kind of impacted me the most, besides the prayer life, et cetera, was one, having conversations about Jesus. Incredible conversations about Jesus pretty much every day. I mean, pretty much every day. I mean, we just sit there and that's what we would talk about and think about and pray about as a community, which that was, hugely transformative because, of course, that shaped the way that we thought and the way that we lived. So conversation about Jesus on a regular basis, daily. Second thing, too, when you move to reach out, I know this is my experience, when you move to share what it is that you believe, you know, the good news, it just sinks in more deeply. I can't really explain it. You know, moving to, you know, lead Bible studies and moving to teach someone how to pray or so on and so forth, that just solidifies it in your mind, you know, in your heart. It's kind of like teaching, you know, I'm sure you learn best when you teach. And I know that was the experience for me in focus, you know, just it sunk into my heart more deeply by reaching out.
Yeah, I think that's so beautiful. I think back, that's one of the things I miss about my time in focus too, is just the conversation.
Yeah.
Just the richness of, you know, you're spending, it's like being in a religious community,
I think,
in a lot of ways, in that
you're
living you're sharing such a common life with these people, and you're spending a lot of time in prayer. Like, you know, my prayer life has dropped off a little bit since focus, but it's, you know, I think of the most prayerful time in my life was those 2 years. Cause you're spending a holy hour, you're going to mass every day. Usually I'm stopping by the chapel throughout the day as well during, you know, when I was a missionary and, you know, you're doing retreats all the time. We'd have a desert day once a month where we basically just went out and spent the whole day in prayer and silence. So, and you're doing that, and you're coming back together with your teammates every morning, you know, in our schedule, I think yours was similar. You'd spend with the team. So we'd have either a team meeting or a team development or, you know, a team breakfast or something. That's how we spent our mornings because the kids are usually in class, the students. and you're just checking in. You know, you have a team fun night once a week, and you're just checking in. You're talking about your prayer. You're talking about what's going on. And that's something that I've had aspects of that since, but the depth of communal life is something I've definitely begun to miss.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, I'm with you. That's a huge part of my story. Yeah. Cool. You ready to jump into adulthood?
Oh, yeah. You don't count focus as adulthood.
Okay. Oh, I do, great. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So leaving focus. Yeah. Okay. I'm interested in this part.
Yeah. I actually, this part of my story is not very well formed, I don't think. I think it's very much unwritten, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, my adulthood, my post-focused life, I think has had a lot of ups and downs.
Which has been what?
Four years. Almost five.
5 years. Almost going on five. Yeah. Your fifth year. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. So I would say initially starting out, always throughout this time, I've had a consistent prayer life, which thank God, because of the habits that I've formed. We have a perpetual adoration chapel. Well, we did before COVID, but we have a adoration chapel here in Huntsville. And that was just a sanctuary for me. I just really grew in my love of adoration even more so.
Yeah,
and it still remains that. Adoration is a huge part of my my sustenance, as a Catholic. So adoration has been a huge part of my spiritual life. I would say community has been big. That's been very difficult, I think. It was difficult for a couple years, kind of moving back to Huntsville and having the community in focus. And, you know, that was the way in which I encountered Jesus a lot. And Jesus kind of moved me into a period of loneliness over the next mm-hmm. couple of years, until mm-hmm. we were able to form the community that we're in now, mm-hmm. which has been a blessing to encounter Jesus in that community again. So, yeah. That has been, again, a part of my journey, is just seeking Jesus in community. In fact, I don't think it's possible to meet him fully without real community.
I think that's
one thing that I'm discovering in my heart.
I read in the catechism at one point in college, and it was at a point where I really needed to read it. But it's something along the lines of, it says, man cannot believe alone, just mm-hmm. as he cannot live alone.
Right.
And that faith is a communal thing. It takes community. It takes others in order to walk in that journey together. And that was a really helpful thing for me at a time when I felt like I was going at it alone. So I totally get that.
That's been ringing in my ears a lot lately, that the Bible verse from Genesis, actually, it's not good for man to be alone.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. Yeah. It's so true to my experience. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, yeah, I'll mention too. I won't go a whole podcast without mentioning just kind of Bishop Barron's name.
Here's the collective eye roll from the audience.
In seeking spiritual formation and spiritual guidance, he has been like very much a spiritual father figure for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just being fed by his ministry, I think, also in combination with that too, I think you guys, you and Dan Fox especially have been big figures in my spiritual life and in my life in general, mm-hmm. Just kind of motivating me to be a disciple, and a lot of times it's not easy for me to do that on my own. So those things I would say.
So I want to press a little further in this period, if that's all right.
Yeah.
So I think this is something I've talked to you a little bit about before, but I want our listeners to hear. But you spent 2 years without really any community mm-hmm. After Focus. What was that like? Because you went from having the best community, not only of your life, but that really anybody could ever experience.
Yeah.
To really having a couple years without really much of anything.
Yeah.
And then also the transition out of that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was tough. So my first year, I was a high school teacher. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big asterisk to this experience, because that was my community in a lot of ways. I would spend mm-hmm. a lot of my day.
And you coached.
Yeah, and I coached too. So that was really healing for me, so that was my community. I spent a lot of time thinking and praying about my students and my players, mm-hmm. Throughout the day. There wasn't like a whole lot of time to sit there and be lonely or whatever, in my own thoughts. I was always kind of thinking and praying about my students and about my players,
right?
Which is a blessing, huge blessing, but you're right. The community wasn't there. I definitely spent a lot of nights, like wishing someone was there to hang out with at 7 p.m. or whatever, you know. I definitely had a lot of phone calls with former friends.
Yeah, you stayed in good touch, and you still do, from what I can tell, with some of your Focus friends from Focus.
Yep, I have a few very close friends from Focus. Yeah.
And you were talking to them throughout this time.
Right.
They just weren't here.
Right. Yeah. That's right, yeah. So, yeah, that happened. I'll say, too, that in the middle of these 2 years, I had my summer projects experience with Focus. So, yeah, the summer in between these 2 years of isolation or whatnot.
After you left Focus, you went back to do summer projects.
I went back to do summer projects. Okay. And, yeah, I probably should mention that in my story as being really just a
Do you do that as a missionary, too, or just...
Typically you do it right when you leave. So that's like your leaving Focus.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah. Typically you do that now right when you leave.
You took a year.
Yeah.
Taught for a year.
Just by quote unquote chance, really it was Providence. But I knew the director of summer projects and he thought I was still in Focus. And he calls me and he's like, hey, like, you know, we're doing this. I'm like, well, I'm not in Focus anymore, but I'd love to. And he was like, oh, okay, or whatever. So we
that's hilarious.
Wow. Yeah, so I went.
God knew you needed that.
Yeah. But that was just absurd community.
This is in Colorado, Estes Park.
Yeah, in Colorado with 70 college kids and, you know, well, 65 college kids and 10 or so missionaries. And I was one of those. And it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. Yeah, that's one of the most incredible communities of my life again. Yeah, so there's community again, you know, just popping up in my journey as being so important to my walk with Jesus. So
I'm so jealous that you got to do summer projects. That's the one thing I wish, man. I wish I would have been able to do during my time as a missionary.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful, yeah. So those things were sustaining. And Jesus always does this, you know, like periods of loneliness. He always provides what one needs to be sustained, and that's very true in my life. You know, I'm still here. I'm still here. I haven't died yet. And there are always periods during that time where he would motivate me, where he would inspire me, where he would fill me. So,
Okay, you got that's between those 2 years without much community. You start building community. You know, 2 years out, and then it's been about 2.5 years since then. What in what ways have you grown, right? Since then, I guess, in the last 2.5 years.
That's really interesting. Let's see. I think I won't go into too much of detail with this, but I actually think there's a lot of ways in which I have regressed a little bit. You know, it's just harder living out in the world than it is as a focused missionary. You know, it's harder to maintain virtue. It's hard to not only maintain but grow in virtue. It's hard to maintain your spiritual life, etc. So
I think complacency is a real temptation in the working world,
and I think that's a temptation in our community too. I mean, I won't lie, I think it is. But it's just an incredible consolation, I think, to on a basic level just have a community of 10-15 people to just hang out with on a Saturday night when you need someone. You know, I can't tell you how much of like a cross loneliness has been in my life. Yeah. You know, and that is such a consolation and such a comfort to that.
Yeah.
So on a basic level, I would say our community is very much, you know, good for that. It's it's just a consolation in this our loneliness, as Dorothy Day said. You know.
I think too. You know, you brought up Dan Fox, and I think of, you know, this time when that community started forming, the community that we're part of now. You know, I remember started with a men's group, right? And it was just kind of, it was right when I moved back here, just started running into people. You know, Dan was a friend of mine from college, reconnected with. And I remember when the three of us, like, it was kind of one of those, like, I reconnected with him, reconnected with you. And it's like, okay, these guys got to meet each other. Like, this has to happen, right? And so over the course of the next few months, like y'all did, and I remember y'all would get like coffee on your own. I'm like, yes, it's working. they're friends.
Wait for me.
Two of my favorite people are becoming friends. And, you know, this podcast is born out of that. Because, you know, it was within, you know, it was 9 months, you know, 9 months after I moved here, and we're kind of building this community, that COVID hits, right?
Yeah.
And where, that loneliness, that, you know, isolation is happening to everybody. It's basically forced upon everybody. And I remember we would get together under the most ridiculous circumstances because, you know, it was
literally
during the lockdown. So we'd like sit on the front porch and like just socially distanced conversations. And but those were just like some of the most meaningful conversations to come together with the two of y'all. And we would, I mean, we'd just talk for hours.
Yeah.
Just about what we're reading, what we're praying about, what we're struggling with. And those were really meaningful times for me, I know.
No, that's a great point. Yeah. And it's also, too, I mean, it's amazing that we have that. And it's also, too, like, just thinking about, again, there's so many people that didn't have that and still don't. You know, they still don't. Yeah. And they're searching and they want that, you know. And so it's a grace of God to be able to have that experience, to have that community. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think one of the things about, you know, about our friendship with Dan as well is that I think the three of us all, like, challenge each other in different ways. Mm-hmm. You know, like, Dan is so much smarter than both of us. And so, like, just, like, the level of intellectual, like, the intellectual perspective he takes on the faith, it just, like, I learned from him, you mm-hmm. know? And I think I learned from you a lot of things that I can only learn from you.
Yeah. Yeah, same here.
Yeah. So yeah, anyway.
What I mean is I learned a lot of things from me that I couldn't learn from you.
Yeah, yeah, and from Dan.
Yeah, sure. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Okay, good. Yeah,
yeah. No. Okay, yeah. So, I guess anything else from this kind of most recent period of your life that you want to share?
No. Yeah, it's an unwritten story. My walk with Jesus.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about those most recent years because you don't know where it's going.
That's right. Yeah, you don't have that hindsight view.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got a little bit of time, so I just kind of want to dig a little deeper into kind of your influences. So I guess when you think about like your spirituality, and I'd say you have a unique spirituality, but I'm curious what's influenced that, right? So the ways that you pray, the ways that you approach life, I'd say, I mean, just kind of as a descriptor, like, I think you're a passionate person. Passion's really important to you, right? Being passionate about the things that you do. And so I'm curious, and I think our listeners are probably curious too, like what has influenced that? What's influenced the way that you go about your spiritual life?
Oh my, that's a very complicated question, I think, and one that I can't hope to answer fully, but very complicated. And I'll say, obviously, my family is one thing. I'll kind of rule them out of this conversation because they seem to obviously have a role in my, you know, who I am,
right,
who I become.
Yeah,
so,
sure. Yeah. Your sense of humor, I think, is shaped by your family a lot.
Maybe so. Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I'll mention that about my family in particular, is that we do have a kind of a humorous relationship with one another, which I think definitely has a role in my spiritual life and my relationship with Jesus. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we're coming off the humor episode.
That's
so.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, so I would say that. Let's see, what else? I think I, in particular, have been really shaped by, actually, my crosses. Mm-hmm. You know, I mentioned this before, and this kind of comes from, you know, my upbringing of, you know, feeling the pressure of soccer and school and, you know, needed to perform and needed to meet all these expectations and so on and so forth. Those are very much negative things, you know, and defects, I would say, and crosses that I've had to live with. And it's interesting to think about how those have very much shaped my passion, like the way in which I go about my spiritual life. You know, I put my energy into that because I put my energy into those things. I formed those habits, albeit from a wrong reason, I think. But it's kind of interesting thinking about how the way that Jesus turned those crosses, those, you know, things that I worked so hard for into, you know, he propelled it into my relationship with him, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think a bit. I think I definitely see the suffering, where you turn when you suffer and when you have crosses to carry,
right?
I think is a very formative thing.
Yeah, I think one of the things too that, like, you know, I feel as though I'm able to, it is central to my life now is committing to growing in my relationship with Jesus. And the reason why I think I'm able to do that now is because of my commitment to those things. You know, my how I put my energy towards those things, soccer and school and, you know, working hard in those things form the habits that are necessary to work hard in the spiritual life, you know? That's kind of what I was trying to say.
So the times of suffering helps you develop like discipline,
right,
that you've taken to the spiritual life, you think.
That makes sense.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think another huge thing too, and this ties more into my spirituality, my relationship with Jesus, is I have felt several periods of loneliness in my life. And I thank God I have like decided to turn to Jesus in those times. And because of that, I mentioned I love adoration, and I love another eye-opening thing about things that I love. I really love John of the Cross and his spirituality and his kind of his idea of Jesus being our lover, essentially, it being kind of a lover and beloved relationship, which very much affects my spirituality. And I like Penny and Sparrow's music, which is very much about that, about Jesus pursuing us as a lover and us being the beloved. And so that is very much a part of my spirituality, like that romantic kind of adventurous side of my relationship with Jesus, which has definitely been because of, you know, my periods of loneliness and my experiences.
Just this week you were sharing some of John of the Cross's poetry.
I would say those things, whatever you want to take from that. It was kind of sporadic.
And then art. Where's art come from?
Oh, my. Yeah, that's the same thing. Same old story with beauty. You're right. That's such a meaningful part of my spirituality. And I would say, why is that important in my spiritual life? I would say that, it's very much helps me to connect with Jesus in that sense. In the sense that when I see a visual work of art, it just helps. It helps me with that closeness, I think. Why that versus another thing, I can't really tell you. I don't know. It's just that's the way Jesus has decided to speak to me. But visual forms of art help me feeling closeness towards Jesus. To understanding him better. I can't really say why. I don't know. You can help me flesh that out a little bit, but I can't really say.
Yeah, why. Some of the things don't need an explanation.
Yeah.
I think there's some things that just. Yeah, it's how the Lord works in your life, and that's how you experience him the deepest, you know. Well, thank you, Nick, for sharing your story with me and with our listeners. I think it's been a blessing for me, I know, to hear some of these ways the Lord's worked in your life that I haven't even heard before.
Of course, yeah. Thanks for listening. Let's see what else. What else do I want to say? Yeah, it's been really fun talking about me.
Okay. We didn't even get into your 24 tattoos, but...
Oh, I only have one, but okay. Let's not even worry about that. Maybe we'll have a podcast on
tattoos.
Nick's tattoo.
That'd be a good one. I was wondering if that story would come up, but we'll have to save it for another day.
That's definitely a story for another time.
Yeah. Okay. Great. This will be probably like our Christmas episode.
Oh yeah.
Because I think this is going to come out like just after Christmas. So a Merry Christmas to all of you. And make sure to celebrate Christmas for the whole season. Remember, it starts on the 25th and continues for at least, 2 weeks?
Yep.
Till the baptism of the Lord. A little more than that. So, Merry Christmas to all and to all a good night.
Amen.
Praise be Jesus Christ.
Now and forever.
Amen.
I thought you were going to end it with that.